special edition episode, serious 1 hour episode. Which one is this?
It's just, keep on keeping on.
We are at episode 100 of the NBA Team Podcast. How many other podcasts on the Place to Be Nation pop feed, which is the one that we're on now? By the way, you have any comments on us being sent to the pop feed?
I have zero comment.
Is that like a no comment as in I don't care, like a passive-aggressive type of like...
It's we are where we are, and...
Well, you got to support our guys here, you know, with all the other Place to Be Nation podcasts. So that we can
The old, we're on a wrestling podcast, talking NBA, and we get put to a pop feed with comic books and beer, so nothing's ever really made sense, so why sort of start now?
Yeah, but for all the people that are on that pop feed that are with us on the, you know, the podcast network, please, if you're interested in the, you know, the wrestling, you know, I think they have some other sports podcasts on those on that feed. If you want to listen to them, go ahead. They have some really nice content there for everybody to listen. But for people who have stuck with us through thick and thin, or just through thick, thank you for listening. Thank you for joining us for this 100th episode where, you know, we had started this almost reluctantly, you would say, probably like in like the fall of 2014, where we were like desperate. I didn't want to be honest, I just didn't want to write regularly anymore for the site. I wanted to try to do something where I could try to get my input, but we could do it on a weekly basis, but I needed a partner. And so we you know, Justin hooked me up with Adam, Justin Rosero, who's like Place to Be Nation, you know, editor man, who he had known. But ironically, Adam actually grew up like not even like 50 or 60 miles away from where I grew up in Louisiana, so it actually kind of worked out pretty well for us all. But any regrets yet?
No, like I said, it started off as Justin needed help for his site, and I was going to be like, all right, let me do an NBA thing, like why your team's off-season failed.
You were doing music, right?
Yeah, he told me to do music, and I was like, all right, I guess I'll do it.
You could do a music podcast for the new pop feed.
That'll last probably about 10 episodes, as long as, you know, everything else.
You and Parv and his you know, not Parv, who's the other guy? Who's the guy that did the really long Bob Dylan piece for the Place to Be website? It was literally like 20 pages long, I remember that. But it got a bunch of hits, so everybody was a big fan of that one. But yeah, we're going off track here. But yeah, you were talking about you and Justin hooking you up with me.
Yep, and it just somehow worked, and so here we are now, episode 100.
It is working, right? I mean, we're like this far into it, but you know, I mean, even Anger Management with Charlie Sheen got 100 episodes. You know.
Oh, that was after 10 episodes. That was a great 10-90 split they did, and
exactly, that was one. Like George Lopez had like a recent one right on FX, the same channel, where they were just like the whole goal is to get to syndication. Once you get to syndication, it pays for itself, and you can cancel the show, kind of thing.
Yeah, and then afterwards, after those 10 episodes, nobody watched it, and then FX had to just burn off those episodes.
Yeah, exactly. Really fun stuff. But yeah, thank you for everybody for coming in, and we got a little bit of eventful stuff going on. We were kind of reconvening here after we did our share of our NBA previews. We also did I really enjoyed doing the college preview for the NCAA team. If anybody wants to go back, that was last week's episode number 99. I talked about how on that episode that the season was going to start that Friday. It's actually the Friday after that. So this Friday coming up, college basketball starts, but the NBA is already kind of fresh in the oven. But speaking of fresh in the oven, I need to bring something up for Adam because I know he's not one to kind of divulge things, but I had to mention after his passive-aggressive photo post of a woman's pregnancy magazine that Adam Murray and his wife are expecting. So congratulations to Mr. Murray and his wife, and hopefully prayers for them that everything works out well.
Gracias. It's just basically, you know, it's the, well, I have to beat her post out. Mm-hmm. So I will quietly release the information in Game 7 of the World Series in the you know, bottom of the ninth inning when it's tied, so nobody will see it, and then she can have...
Did you actually do it during... Is that legit? You actually did it at 9 o'clock at night during the ninth
inning? I actually did it during... It was, like, 12:30 in the morning, so it was, like, the World Series was maybe just in the 10th inning, or had just... And it was done so it could slide under the radar.
But then again, that can backfire because a lot of people are on their Facebook feeds.
They're on their Facebook, but they're not paying attention. They're just posting. They're not reading other people's stuff. They're like, yay, Cubs. They're not going, oh, what is it? What else is everybody else doing? And then, you know, she woke up and then she posted her normal one, and that had like a billion likes and whatever, and mine was just quietly under the radar.
Okay, but will you promise to keep us slightly updated?
There will be...
Or is the bear going back in the cave?
There will be two or so press releases, and then that'll be it.
That's actually a nice transition with the Cubs, who had that incredible ratings bonanza of a World Series with a Game 7 that went to extra innings. Very wild, weird, sloppy game, but it ended with the Cubs ending their 108-year drought. I think Chicago is still drunk, and we're, you know, it's Sunday. So, but is there, first of all, I want to bring up two things. First, if Cleveland, does this make LeBron look even better given the fact that he was the one that broke the curse and it wasn't just the Indians tagging along? So LeBron was like the beacon for Cleveland sports winning a pro sports franchise instead of two franchises, or does it not matter in the karma of it all?
It doesn't really matter in the grand scheme of things, because if it wasn't the Cubs, nobody would really care about the World Series. Mm-hmm. Wasn't Kansas City, and didn't that go to a Game 7, or wasn't that dramatic? And
2014 went to a Game 7, and the Giants beat them, but the next year the Royals won the World Series.
And did anybody care about either of those?
Not really, especially ratings-wise.
Exactly.
I think the Cubs one got 65% improvement over the Game 7 in 2014.
Because if it were L.A. and Cleveland or L.A. and Toronto, nobody would care. It was just, we liked the Cubs storyline. It was everybody was rooting for them who wasn't in Cleveland. And it was just, you know, come on, good for them. Now, that's, you know, oh, baseball's back. No.
Well, I mean, a perfect example is like 2004, they had a big ratings spike because of the Red Sox ending their, I think, 86-year curse with the curse of the Bambino. But the following year, you know, the White Sox play the Astros, nobody watched, you know.
That's exactly, if people started caring, why does Tampa Bay, oh well, they're good, then oh nope, nobody cares.
Now the King did make an appearance at the Game 7, flexing his muscles after Raji Davis hit the game tying home run, I think in the eighth inning it was. But I gotta say this, J.R. Smith, after the Cubs had a 6-3 lead, takes off his shirt, and all of a sudden the rally starts. There's got to be something to this with JR and the tattooed chest.
It's, you know, it's good that they're fans and not just look at me, I'm in the owner's booth, I'm, you know, schmoozing. You don't see that. Which is, you know, it made it more endearing. So even though, you know, Cleveland lost and LeBron lost, he was still getting into it as a fan. And it's good to see, you know, not athletes. Like, again, they're better than us. Well, I'm watching it. Look at me. They're getting into it. And then it was a World Series that was, you know, very dramatic at the end.
And it also it also gives more credence to the LeBron bump, where when LeBron sponsors a team or an athlete, they lose. Except for LeBron, who somehow comes out squeaky clean these days. But speaking of LeBron James and the Cleveland Cavaliers, they're the last remaining undefeated team so far in this fresh NBA season. They're leading the league in points per game. They're leading the league in three-pointers made. We'll talk about the team that led the league in three-pointers made last season, the media darlings of the NBA this year, the Golden State Warriors. We'll talk about them a little bit later. But it seems like everything's coming up Millhouse for the Cleveland Cavaliers. Is that a fair way to say it?
They are the champions. They are riding on all cylinders, no pun intended, and this is we expected from them.
Is there anything different that you've seen? I mean, I've seen Kyrie Irving have some bad shooting nights so far. I've seen him make a ton of threes. Kevin Love seems a little more comfortable. He looks like he's toned down. He's lost a little bit of weight, or maybe he's gotten stronger. I'm not sure where the difference is. Maybe it's just confidence level, but it seems like Love's playing better. LeBron is kind of in stealth, passive-aggressive LeBron mode, where he gets 25 points and 7 rebounds and 11 assists. He is, I think, second in the league in assists, right behind James Harden. I think you predicted James Harden at 12 assists a game.
Well, yeah, James Harden will have 12 assists and 100% usage. And
didn't, against the Lakers on opening night, I think he had 17 assists at the end of the third quarter, but he had none in the fourth quarter when the Lakers made the comeback and beat the Rockets. But anyways, with LeBron, I mean, it seems like he's just kind of in his, like I said, his stealth mode, where he's just gathering up really great stats, but he's not trying to dominate the game. He's not trying to take over, because it's not time to do it yet.
Well, A, it's early in the season, so one of the benefits is you have all these old people like Richard Jefferson and Mike Dunleavy healthy. Mm-hmm. And there's no coach turmoil from the beginning of the season. So it's just, well, they can play as they know LeBron is smart enough, and the team is old enough to know they can't get complacent with the we're champions, so we can rest and sort of phone it in. They're like, no, we need to come out and we need to start off really hot, so then we can coast when we need our players to rest.
Which is actually a decent game plan. Like, let's try to gather up what we get. They did that with the Eastern Conference, but the problem was the Warriors had gathered up such a great record in the West, obviously, with the undefeated start and having only two losses at the end of the year, at the end of 2015, that, like, there was just no way they were going to catch him. So it felt like the Cavs were chasing something they weren't able to chase, and they were, like, they were reaching by the time they got to the All-Star break. They were trying to do more than they were capable of, and that's when the coaching change happened. Whereas this year, it seems like the Cavaliers know what they can do. They're maxing out a little bit, and I just hope they don't run out of gas. But I think LeBron's smart enough to know, if I don't run out of gas, this team won't run out of gas.
Exactly. It's the old, it's a marathon. The season doesn't really start till Christmas. And then this is the real preseason of, let's get our lineups down, let's get our play style down. Unless you're just James Harden, where, again, it's just, I'm the team is me.
Okay. A lot of other factors going on other than Cleveland, but let's kind of switch over to the Warriors, who were the team of last year, and now they're the media it team this year with Kevin Durant going there. Durant looks comfortable. You know, he's had a 39-point game I've seen. He had he looked dominant against the Thunder in the game where Russell Westbrook, wearing a photographer jacket in the walking into the locker room as a kind of a slight at Kevin Durant, because for the Players Tribune he had taken photo. He was like the photographer for Super Bowl 50, so I guess a lot of people saw that as a slight against, a little bit of a shot on Durant. But Durant dominated that game in Golden State against the Thunder. Now they turned around and they got blown out by Luke Walton's LA Lakers, and that's their second loss, because they had lost the opening night game to the Spurs. Is there any concerns really with the chemistry that you've seen? Maybe Draymond Green not scoring as much as he used to, even though his assists and his rebounds are up. Klay Thompson not shooting the ball well at all from three to start the season. Any kind of like alarming things that you've sort of noticed just from the little bit you've seen of the Warriors?
Well, the Warriors, like we said, Zaza Pachulia doesn't look good at all.
He's a decent passing big, but not. He's not Bogut. He's not, And they lost. I warned everybody about this when we did the preview. They lost a lot of guys, and a lot of people were like, well, they didn't really go to a lot of their bench anyway, because the death lineup was like their secret weapon, and that's true. But those bench guys really helped them out, because they were all very good offensively. They all lent to the system. Whereas now you're trying to break in David West, who to me is done.
West is done. Zaza doesn't fit the system, and you're just relying on a small ball, your small ball lineup of death, but you're not going to out-rebound anybody. You're not going to out-defend anybody now if you're relying on having to play Iguodala 30 minutes a night every night now.
Yeah, the Warriors are that weird juggle, because, they're giving up tons of points per game at the as we're speaking, I believe they're giving up 110 points per game. They are tied with Cleveland in points per game scored at 112, which is good. But the thing is, you look at their numbers on defensive when it comes to scoring allowed, and you would say, oh, that's really bad. But their defensive PER, or, you know, defensive efficiency, is the one that a lot of people rate because it combines the rebounding with the takeaways and all, and the block shots and stuff like that. And the Warriors usually do well with that. Durant, if you've noticed, has been really like blocking shots at that, in that small ball big lineup. But Durant can't be the defensive linchpin all the time. That's too much responsibility.
No, he's not going to. But the thing is, with you know, Golden State, like, remember with San Antonio last year, it takes a few games for everyone to find their role. Remember, it was LaMarcus Aldridge, he's out of place, he's unhappy, what's his role? Now, all of a sudden, you know, 20 games, all the Spurs are fine. It's the same thing with this type of thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, and we have heard small things about, like, Aldridge with maybe some issues, like, being unhappy. We heard the same murmurs when he was in Portland, but that was with impending free agency, whereas here, I mean, if he leaves, it would have to be a trade where the Spurs just realize it's just not a working relationship between him and Popovich and Kawhi Leonard, who's clearly the star of the Spurs. The Spurs have had some struggles too. They got blasted by the Jazz. The Clippers went to San Antonio also and just walloped them over the weekend. And the here's another one that's a little bit surprising. The Clippers are the runaway in terms of points allowed at 90.7 so far. I kind of thought that Doc would do this, that he would try to turn the Clippers into more of a defensive squad. He seems to be making use out of Blake Griffin and Chris Paul better by staggering their minutes instead of just clumping up their minutes together and letting their bench wallow in the 10 or 12 minutes that Paul and Griffin are off the floor. But, I mean, what's different for the Clippers? Is there anything different that you've seen?
The Clippers are just a weirdly ugly team. It is just, I don't know how they're...
I mean, Austin Rivers still sucks. I mean, I'm being honest here. I know he's their, like, backup point guard, and they need something, and he can play the two confidently at times, but, you know, he's got more, like, irrational confidence.
And he also wasn't very good. He's on a very good period, but it's just like, you watch games, like, you watch them, they don't seem to have that confident as... You don't feel confident in watching them. You don't like, oh, this is a dominant team. This is the team we all predicted to be in the top three. It's sort of like, well, they're squeaking it out, but it looks kind of ugly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the pace is not... Because remember, when Doc came in, everyone was like, well, they were scoring a bunch of points with Vinny Del Negro, but Del Negro didn't know what he was doing, so... So Doc's going to rein it in on defense, just like he did in Boston. And the opposite happened. You know, Alvin Gentry, who we'll talk about him in a second, but the Pelicans. But Gentry was in there as, like, an assistant coach. Teron Lue, I think, was there with Doc, too. And they really, like, turned it up offensively. They were, like, the best offensive team in basketball that year. And it seems like that Doc is sort of, like, doing what we thought he was going to do when he came in 2013, where he's, like, dialing it back. Is that a decent way of putting it?
It's I don't, because the bench is just so young and green or just terrible.
Mm-hmm.
It's you're really relying on your four stars to do whatever they possibly can, and I'm just not as confident as you are, apparently.
Yeah, well, I just like what I see. You know, I just like what I see. Another team that's looked decent, the Toronto Raptors, mainly because of DeMar DeRozan averaging 35 points a game and shooting over 50%, which for him is like a miracle.
Yeah, he went to the offseason, I guess, to prove everybody wrong and, like, I can shoot. The team looks good. Pascal Siakam is in the starting role and getting minutes.
He's in there because of Sullinger having a foot injury. So they're a little bit shorthanded. Jakob Poeltl's getting some play too, but their front court is their big, big bugaboo. Obviously, I mean, that's going to be the story of the whole season for Toronto.
It's going to be, but they expect them to make a trade.
Yeah, I could see them trying to make a move. But DeRozan looks really, really good. I think he's only made like 2 threes all season long. He's like the guard version of David West when West was in his prime in New Orleans. Like, he's the mid-range monster. Like, he does all the work there and at getting to the free throw line. He's just been the prototypical mid-range two. You know, he just goes after you. Kyle Lowry has played well. They've squeaked out some close wins. They did have the loss at home to Cleveland, but Cleveland's undefeated. They're the best team in the East. That was sort of expected. You know, just a few other kind of interesting nuggets. Your Boston Celtics, I'll give you a little bit of time to harp.
Jaylen Brown looks to be a very good draft pick. The team can't rebound for anything, but very offensively efficient.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's all you got? I mean, they had that win in Chicago. I mean, it was a good road win because in the other road game that they had, like their first road test the week before, Cleveland sort of blasted them on TNT. But then they went on ESPN and they played Chicago. And they played well against Chicago. No, the Knicks did too, like a night later. And the Knicks are... I don't really have, you know, to be honest with you, Adam, I haven't watched enough of New York. I saw the opening night game against Cleveland where Cleveland blasted him in the second half. I saw the return game for Rose and Noah in Chicago. That was kind of an ugly game. Chicago did not play well at all down the stretch. But have you seen anything really out of New York to kind of give you like a guess of what
they are? Not a harmonious team. It seems like, oh, they're going to try to run elements of the triangle, and you have it just doesn't, you know, Carmelo looks he looks to be slowing down. Noah doesn't seem to have much left in the tank. He is coming off injury last year, and it's just, you know, Knicks fans have already tried.
Yeah, I'm sorry, you were kind of breaking up there. But with the Knicks, it's just been a little messy, not a lot of togetherness, like you're saying. I can kind of see your point. The Blazers offensively look really good. I think you guessed right on the Miami Heat, though. That was a pretty decent guess, with them not being the kind of team that you would expect to be a strong contender for really anything other than maybe the seller.
Yeah, and you know, once you decide, okay, we're just gonna kill off Bosch and take his money, his cap money. Okay, I know, I see you're doing that, but there's really no development. And watching Justice Winslow, he is gonna, I don't know if he's ever gonna be one of those offensive superstars.
Yeah, he seems like he's destined to be like a really good Otto Porter. Is that a decent way of putting it?
That's sort of sad, but it's you don't have a shooter on that team, and Deion Waiters, as we can see, isn't really carrying that team anywhere. Whiteside is still, he's putting effort in now.
The only thing Deion Waiters is carrying is McDonald's because he is out of shape. I mean, that's one thing I could tell you off the bat. Unless it's just his roly-poly-oly figure, you know, as a two-guard, you know, and I just never noticed it until he was wearing a Miami jersey. But yeah, Waiters, not really fond of how he's playing in Miami. Tyler Johnson looks good. You know, I mean, that was actually I think they're going to come back and say that was actually a decent signing, you know.
Well, he's scrappy. That's the thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He's one of those scrappy players who is going to get those sort of garbage points.
Any teams that have surprised you, like maybe the Utah Jazz with Gobert, Rudy Gobert, obviously, but also with Gordon Hayward is the name I was trying to get out of my mouth. Hayward coming back this weekend after his fractured finger. Maybe the Rockets looking a little more harmonious than we expected, especially on offense with James Harden running the one. Maybe Orlando not being as terrible as we thought at first. Like, is there anything there?
Orlando is a very tough team to watch.
Mm-hmm.
Those are rough games to watch. But as for surprises, Brooklyn being as feisty as they are.
Yeah. I saw our guy Isaiah Whitehead from Seton Hall got a start, which very much surprised me. I don't know too much about them statistically other than the fact that Brook Lopez in one game made more three-pointers than he did in his entire career. Now, this has officially become like a zombie epidemic with the threes. Would that be fair to say?
Everybody's just going to shoot. Everybody's just shooting threes, and you will see in the playoffs, it's just going to go, you know, people are going to start defending the threes, and now it's just going to be ugly basketball because everybody's been, well, let's all have the center shoot threes. But no, Brooklyn's been very feisty in keeping games close and battling back as opposed to, you know, Philly, who is just terrible for being terrible. the Jazz, we expected them to be good. Houston, I wouldn't say they're harmonious because it's what we expected. It's going to be 120 to 118 every game.
Shootouts. Mm-hmm.
And I wouldn't say it's harmony. It's just in, you know, you're going to lose to a lot of, you shouldn't be losing to bad teams, period. And they're going to be in the middle of the pack eventually once teams, you know, Harden goes down, that team is completely lottery bound. And
well, one of the teams the Rockets lost to that you're saying losing to bad teams is the Lakers, but are the Lakers a bad team? I mean, I would still say yes, but there's definitely more hope than I thought there would be.
Well, there is hope. Ingram, as we've seen, is really, he's going to come out and shoot and, you know, light everything up. No, he's not going to be Durant out of the gate. He's going to take a little while to develop as sort of, I guessed.
It's going to take a while, yeah.
And you have your developmental pieces, but you're still, let's start Mozgov and let's start Meta World Peace and Luol Deng. Okay, then how are Ingram and Larry Nance Jr. going to get time when you're just sort of putting on the second unit, if that's supposed to be the future of your team? Obviously, it'll change, but...
Well, Larry Nance Jr.'s played decently. I mean, he was pretty good anyway his first year, you know, in the limited minutes that he played. But now, you know, after they cut Anthony Brown, you know, Ron Artest or Meta World Peace, you know, he's not really getting those minutes. That's Nance's minutes to play alongside, you know, Julius Randle, Mozgov, like you were talking about. D'Angelo Russell, I don't know. He's like a poor man's Russell Westbrook. Is that okay to say?
He's... Depends who you talk to. He's either overrated or just... He is who he is, a young point guard, and they take a while to develop.
Do you have any opinion of the real Russell Westbrook? The real article? I mean, he's putting up the obvious triple doubles and just, you know, dominating games when he plays inferior opponents.
He's, like we said, he's in vengeance mode now.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So we got just an angry player who's going to will his team to win.
Was there one like game that really impressed you? Maybe that scrappy Clipper win that was under, I think it went under 100 points between the both of them. But that was a decent win. Then they got blasted by the Warriors, where Durant was obviously out to get them. But you know, the triple double game, I think there was one that he had against Phoenix in particular that went to overtime. That was some pretty nutty numbers. I think he had like 50 points, I believe.
Something like that.
Okay, speaking of guys scoring who have scored 50 points this season, my guy Anthony Davis, I mean, Adam, I don't know what else he can do. I mean, he's you know, one of the leaders in points per game in the league, in the top five. You know, he's in the top 10 in rebounding. He's averaging 10 made free throws per game. He's leading the lead in blocks at 3.17. He's doing everything he possibly can, but the New Orleans Pelicans, I mean, we're looking at a cellar dweller here.
Yeah, and there's really no urgency to let's try to develop these young guys. I don't understand it. And obviously we would sort of see Alvin Gentry might be the problem as opposed to the answer.
Well, the defense has actually played well. It's the offense, ironically, which is Gentry's baby, that has just stunk it up late in games. I mean, they blew two games against the Grizzlies and the Suns. I mean, the Suns game, they should have won it. They just should have won the game. I mean, they couldn't finish. It's like Sixers' eyes. I mean, we've seen this with the Sixers how many times this year already? Like, three times? Where they just couldn't close out a game?
Yeah, and you can't stop anybody, then you just go cold offensively, and you're not, you know, Buddy Hield is just getting buried for Tim Frazier, and, you know, you spend a lot of money to shore up your bench, however, everybody's already injured again, and
yeah, the sabermetrics-y move of getting Solomon Hill, but putting him at the four instead of the three, or putting him at the three instead of the four, if you will, it's just I don't think that one's working out as well as I thought. I'll give you a couple of like particular things, not necessarily a player or a team, just certain things I've noticed that have surprised me. T.J. Warren averaging 22 points a game for the Suns.
I mean, that's an anomaly.
Avery Bradley bouncing back big time with like incredible numbers. He's averaging over 20 points, or maybe close to it, 8 rebounds. He's shooting well from the three-point line. I thought after his injury in the playoffs and Marcus Smart's emergence that Bradley was going to be trade bait, and I was dead wrong. It looks like Bradley's kind of wrestled back the starting spot at the two.
Yeah, he always has, but the problem is he gets injured very easily, and it's...
Also, one of the best bargains in terms of contract. I mean, just another really nice cerebral move by Danny Ainge to get him before the cap spiked. You know, just another nice move. A couple of them that I noticed is the fact that the Mavericks offensively are just in the bottom of everything. They are having a really bad year so far. Do you feel like that there's any hope that that can come back up, or do you think signs like Dirk Nowitzki taking time off for sickness or knee soreness or what it was, and J.J. Barea being their leading guard, you know, because of Deron Williams' injury, this all just kind of feels like it's headed in the wrong direction. But it's Rick Carlisle. You know, he works miracles. So do you think he could pull this one off?
No. It's... They just look bad all around, and that's what happens with old teams who you try to get more veterans to keep them going. Eventually, you need a youth movement to come in, and they don't, you know, how many draft picks have they had or kept? And, like, it's just very few and far in between. You just keep, oh, here's a free agent piece, and then...
Yeah, and one of the only ones they kept was Justin Anderson, who's probably one of their best players now, so...
Yep, and they just need to, I don't know, they just need to, you know, give it up this year, let Dirk go out quietly. And
I'll give you three young teams that have been in the top, you know, in the top five in free throws attempted, which means that they're, like, not a great three-point shooting team, but they're, like, more of an attacking team, sort of trying to find their way in terms of scoring. The Denver Nuggets, the Phoenix Suns, and the Minnesota Timberwolves. Now, the Timberwolves are 1-5. It's been a bit of a struggle. Karl Towns has looked okay. His 8 rebounds per game kind of scares me. It makes me feel as if it's either that they are compensating so that they can give more of the rebounds to Gorgui Dieng, who just signed an extension, because Gorgui Dieng has played well, or Towns is just taking it easy on the block so that he doesn't waste too much. But he's had some decent scoring outputs already. But that's the Wolves right there. The Suns, we talked about them a little bit. They're kind of weird. And then the Nuggets lead the league in free throws made. Like, which team are you keeping a closer eye on between the three?
Well, the Wolves, I think, is just more of, you are going to learn this defensive system. Do not stray away from this defensive system. Mm-hmm. And it seems, you know, there seems to be some growing pains with...
Well, defensively, they have looked better, but they were so bad last year that there was nowhere to go but up.
That's why I think the numbers are sort of tempered, because it's just like, look, stay in your lane. Because the third quarter is basically where they've fallen apart every game. They've had just disastrous third quarters. Mm-hmm. The Suns are, I don't know, they might have figured it out by putting Brandon Knight on the bench. Mm-hmm. But you're putting Knight on the bench, and then you're giving Ulis minutes. So.
Well, you were talking about vengeance factor with Russell Westbrook. What did you think of Brandon Knight having his, like, Unikitty revenge scene where he just dunks all over somebody in a game? What you thought of that? It was like Revenge of the Nerdish. Brandon Knight dunking just period just shocked me when I saw that. Devin Booker had a 38-point game against my Pelicans. Well, congratulations to that, I guess. We talked about TJ Warren. Alex Len did not get a contract extension for the rookie extension like some others did that we're going to talk about in a second. So were you surprised by that one?
I wanted to say I was, but the more I think about it, it's just he hasn't really stayed healthy yet. Mm-hmm. He's lost how many games just to, you know, various foot injuries, and foot injuries are a big red flag. So it could just be like, look, you know, we'll match whatever you have, but if we're just going to do a short deal, and if you could prove yourself to be healthy, because, you know, look at Utah and Alec Burks.
He's already out with the ankle, right?
Yeah, it was a shoulder 1 year, and he just hasn't been healthy. And he signed, like, a, you know, that $50 million deal a couple years ago and hasn't been on there. Pekovic in Minnesota hasn't lived up to anything because just injuries. And I think it just might be, well, we don't want to tie ourselves down with this Tyson Chandler thing and then Alex Len, who's going to be injured too.
And we got to talk about our favorite front court duo, the two-headed monster of Jokic Nurkic in Denver. There's other parts, obviously, that Denver is making them lead the league in free throws made, even though they're not necessarily the best team that I've seen. Right now they sit at 2-3. You know, Emmanuel Mudiay, a little better, but he was so bad efficiency-wise last year that that improvement was a necessity. Here I'll tell you one funny stat. Jamal Murray, the rookie, he averages 2.2 points, 2.2 rebounds, and 2.2 assists. So if there's one thing you can call Jamal Murray, it's consistent.
Yeah, his shooting has been way off, and
that's my rookie year, so I'm not looking really.
No, it's not doing too good, but it just, he needs to sort of find his role of what he wants to be, because right now, like, you know, doing two of everything, he's he's just trying to, I think, still be that everyman that Kentucky wanted him to be, and
okay,
I don't want to say he's a specialist right now, but I think he sort of needs to, you know, focus on just do one thing good, and the rest will sort of come around.
Maybe I think he might have a little bit better of a potential, like as sort of the backup point guard behind Mudiay. But it's clear that they want to do that with who was it that they signed over? Augustin? No, not Augustin. They have somebody else, Jameer Nelson, I believe, huh?
Yes.
Yeah. So they want to just have the veteran to kind of show the way to Mudiay instead of like the young leading the young. Let's talk about the rookie extension, shall we?
Okay.
All right. Now there was a couple that we already discussed as we went throughout the previews, because some of these negotiations got sealed pretty quickly. One looks like basically a bargain. Giannis, we'll talk about him briefly anyway because we're batching them all together. Giannis Antetokounmpo with the 4-year, $100 million contract. That is actually a bargain. That has turned into a bargain.
Yeah, but as expected, you know, as opposed to what, 4-106? You know, and you know, you're going to max him out, and anything was going to be bargain, and he's, you know, sort of thrived as his role as the point forward.
Well, I mean, he is the point forward of the NBA along with LeBron James. I mean, there are other guys at the small forward position that can control the game, but he doesn't do it as well as LeBron. Obviously, LeBron's the best ever at it, but Giannis isn't far behind. Like statistically, he is like across the board just killing it. You know, he's at over, you know, 20 points per game. He's averaging I'm trying to remember how many rebounds. It's right between 8 and 9. He's in the top 20 in assists, steals, and blocks. Him and Jabari Parker have a great connection. I like that Bucks team. Their field goal percentage has risen dramatically. They found a 2 in Malcolm Brogdon, the rookie out of Virginia. I don't know if that's going to stick, but they needed something to plug in the loss of Chris Middleton, and it seems like it's working so far. So kind of like where that Bucks team is going. For the other extension that had gotten wrapped up before we started the season, Dennis Schroeder with the 4-year, $70 million extension.
He's Hawks. Looked average. I don't, you know, the thing about the Hawks is, oh, the Hawks are back. They've had a very easy schedule.
Mm-hmm.
They've had Washington, I think, twice, so they might have had, they've just had bad teams coming in, so it's, you know, Dwight Howard's been, he's been quiet and happy, so I guess that's good.
Well, I mean, Schroeder, they had no choice. Once they traded Teague, you knew it was on. Like, okay, Schroeder's the future, but what number can they agree to? You know, and it is something where he's still fairly young. He's 22 years old, so you're hoping to get, you know, you're hoping to get his prime years by the time you get to the end of that contract when he's 27. So, but there's a possibility that he might hit prime at the end of this deal and they might have to pay him again. So they're taking a bit of a calculated risk. Rudy Gobert got basically the same deal as Giannis, 4 for $100 million, $25 million a year. It gives him, it's good. It's a decent deal, obviously, for Gobert because he's a special type of a, you know, center as a shot blocker, as a rebounder. But the problem is it just doesn't bode well for Utah in terms of their cap space, because now you're staring down the potential of a renegotiation and extension for Derek Favors instead of waiting till 2018 for his free agency to kick in, and then Gordon Hayward, who's going to be coming back soon, who's going to opt out of his. So basically, they're going to be capped out by next summer. You know.
Yeah, and I guess maybe, well, there's only, you only go year by year, and obviously with somebody talented like Gobert, you know, same thing with Whiteside, you have to give him that $100 million contract. It's just, you know, you figure it out, and what is Joe Johnson going to give you a couple years? You'll get some money from him.
And will they have enough room for George Hill, who has played well to start the season for Utah? Because he's their de facto point guard. You know.
Oh, there's Dante Exum, who, if he comes back healthy, he'll be the point guard of the future. So
defensively, Exum's look good. Offensively, he's not ready. That's the problem. He's got to be ready by 2017-18 so that they can afford to lose Hill. If he doesn't, then, you know, the Jazz might fall back a little bit, and then they got no cap room to add a piece. And remember, they still got to think about the potential of having to extend Rodney Hood, who's actually played well in filling in for Gobert for Gordon Hayward at the three. So a lot of stuff going on with that one. I'm missing a couple of the extensions that actually were signed. Is there some that we have to bring up? Is one of them was Cody Zeller, right?
Cody Zeller got 4 years, 56
I don't like it as much as some do, but I'm not completely against it. Is the way I'll say it. You know, he does provide for them.
It's a tradable contract.
It is. And his field goal percentage, just like his brother Tyler in Boston, I guess it's just a thing. His field goal percentage has been very high. He's been a little bit more of an attacking big. He kind of plays like a role. He's like a much better John Luehr, you know, who's now playing in Detroit, you know, where you can bring him off the bench, but he's highly productive. You know, as a starter, I don't know how valuable he can be. You know, I don't want to go out of my way and call him Charlotte's best big man, but, you know, he's close to it. You know, but if Cody Zeller's your best big man, that doesn't bode well for you down the road. You might want to look for some improvements. And with Zeller, that's a manageable contract. You can move it. It's not the kind of deal that's going to be a big stopgap for being able to sign another good big man down the road. So, yeah, it's not the worst deal. But maybe they could have gotten him for less if they played hardball.
How much less are you really going to? He's getting starters minutes, so $10 million a year is sort of cheap out, and
that,
he's not
that,
worth.
Yeah, that's becoming the average. It's $10 million for the starter level, so you're right. You know,
it's if you look at Biombo and what he got, mm-hmm. it's a deal, and you know, Dang and what he got, it's like, well.
Well, and also you might be looking at it as like what happened with Jonas Valanciunas when he took the 4 for $60, you know, before the cap spike. And you got him for basically a discount. Whereas with Cody Zeller, does it feel like a discount? I don't know. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, nobody's running around saying that's an awesome deal we got.
Exactly. There was one Gorgui Dieng we talked about. Well, his was very close to Zeller's. I think it was a little bit more, though.
Am I right? 64?
Yeah. Now, he's looked good to start the season. You know Thibodeau likes that two-big lineup. So you knew that he was going to play Towns with Dieng. I just don't know if it works because they're both pure fives. You know, now, well, Towns can shoot three, so he can float to the four, but Dieng can't.
And also, it's insurance in case, you know, Towns goes down, or let's say they draft somebody or trade for another big. Oh, well, now you have a sixth man who's equally as capable. So it's not, you're not killing your cap giving somebody $20 million, and he's been very efficient.
But is he a movable contract? That's the other question. That's the other flip of the coin.
Yeah, right now he is. If he starts crapping out, then maybe not.
Yeah, but you don't want to do like a Nene thing where you sign him to the deal and he's immediately traded. You know what I'm saying? Like you want, like that happened with Tobias Harris, and I think Orlando is still kicking themselves for that deal.
Well, Orlando hasn't. See, Orlando is just one of those teams. Like I said, I cannot figure out. You know, how are they 3-2? Yeah, they're playing crappy teams, but yeah, they still beat them. And their games don't look like anything they do is winnable, and anything they do looks good at all.
Yeah, I apologize if I'm missing any of the other guys that got like got an extension that maybe a bigger name that I'm just not even thinking of.
Well, that's the ones from last year, like CJ McCollum. And
yeah, McCollum's kick. I mean, that's one where like it was like I think it was like 4 for $105, something like that. Where it's like it was like you had to do it. Like you can't let CJ McCollum, who's going to probably wind up being an all-star guard the next year or two. You can't let him walk.
The ones you forgot were Oladipo and Adams.
Oladipo and Adams. Those were the two that were hovering. It was four for 100. It seems like that's the trendy pick with Steven Adams. Offensively, he's looked a lot better to start the season than he did last year. Defensively is really where he made his name in the playoffs. He was fantastic for the Thunder against the Spurs and the Warriors. Are you against the number that he got, or do you think that's just sort of the going rate for an elite
center? That's the going rate, and you know, given between Gobert and Adams, I think I'd rather have Gobert for that money.
Yeah, and we were discussing, you know, the issue between Oladipo, Adams, and Andre Roberson, the small forward / power forward, of what was going to happen there, and it turned out that Roberson was the odd man out. We kind of knew that was going to happen after Oladipo's agent was talking up potential max value for his client. Oladipo didn't get max value. He got $21 million a year. A little polarizing of a deal because some people are not too fond of Oladipo. And the other thing that made it easy for the Thunder anyway was because of the fact that he was the number two overall pick in that 2013 draft. His cap hold was like near $10 million. You know, in that last year. So even though you got him for $21 million, it really wasn't that much more than what you were going to have to hold him for anyway.
Yeah, and it's just sort of you're putting a lot of money into him and you haven't seen really a lot of him and how he'll fit. He's your guy.
I liked him in Orlando. I just thought Orlando did a bad job of trying to mold him. They tried to play him as a point guard when he's not. Now he's in Oklahoma City, where they have a bunch of athletes, which is a nice fit for him, but he's with a point guard that can't shoot or isn't a great outside shooter, and Oladipo himself is not a good outside shooter. So, you know, there's going to be a lot of rockiness there. There's going to be a lot of bricks.
Yeah, and it's, well, they have many years to figure it out.
Well, for sure. This is their team. I mean, this is it. Unless they can move Kanter. You know, that's been the big rumor for the last few months, that Kanter is a movable contract and that he might not be a good fit anymore, especially after they re-signed Adams and Oladipo to those deals in case they want to add another piece. Now let's talk about some of the ones that didn't get the deals done from that 2013 rookie class. We'll start off with the rookie of the year from the 2014 season when that draft class happened. Michael Carter-Williams, who's now with the Bulls and is out like 4 weeks, it was 2 weeks ago, but it was 4 to 6 weeks with a knee and a wrist injury after a really bad foul. What do you think of Carter Williams's value?
It's never a good sign when you're traded three times in your first 4 years. So,
but is there offer sheet potential there?
Somebody's going to give him a deal, but it's not to the point where you're gonna. It's not to the point where he's going to be the value you probably thought of him after the first, you know, few months.
Kelly Olynyk with the Boston Celtics, still recovering from a shoulder injury.
Just never stayed healthy. I guess he's has the second highest percentage of seven-footers, like, in all time after Nowitzki or something.
He loves threes.
It's some weird stat with him and three-pointers, but in 4 years, he was just never healthy, and you can't give a ton of money. And if you want to maintain that flexibility to go after another max eight fridge deal, you're not going to do that. So yeah, he's not going to get. He's going to be on one of those 1 to 2 year, you know, 1 year, 2 year team option prove it deals.
Could it be a Tyler Zeller situation? But here's the problem with Tyler Zeller: he was in a good spot because they had the cap space to use after the Horford signing because they didn't get the second piece. So they had to use the cap space for something, so Zeller was just there. So it was like, okay, I guess we'll give Tyler Zeller this deal. Whereas with Kelly Olynyk, I don't think he's in the plans. Like, I think they got an idea of what they want to do with that cap space, and maybe Olynyk's not in the plans.
Well, Tyler Zeller, his contract, he was just signed basically for, you know, trade fodder of, okay, well, we'll give you him for $8 million in addition to whatever exemption or to get something decent in return. The same thing when they signed Amir Johnson for $12 million, mm-hmm. you know, before the cap started.
And they kept the team option on him in Yurebko because, you know, they just had to use the cap space.
They had to use it, and let's get a nice body in if we need to get rid of if we need to jettison that contract, we can quite easily.
Mm-hmm. But what I'm saying is that, you know, Danny Ainge, he always is hunting for a star. If he finds one in the summer, those are the ones that are going to be gone. And Olenek's probably going to be the last cut. He's going to be, I mean, they had so many first-round contracts, especially with the first-round deals, rookie deals with the CBA, the collective bargaining agreement that's going to be coming out in the next couple of weeks or maybe in the next month with the parameters of that deal. But one of the big ones is that the rookie contracts will go up. The rookie scale will increase. There's so many. They had so many first-round picks that Danny Ainge had to cut R.J. Hunter, a guy he did not want to cut.
Yeah, he didn't want to cut, and the same thing, you know, James Young will be. He didn't get his fourth year extended, and, you know, just looking at, you know, you have Yabusele and Ante Zizic, that's a four, you know, a four and a five. Who are the two players we just mentioned? Tyler Zeller, Kelly Olynyk, and James Young. Wow, gee, those are two first-round picks are going to come in. I wonder who's going to be leaving. Could it be those guys? So
the Wizards have struggled early, but Otto Porter Jr. did not get the extension, but he has played decently to start the season. His field goal percentage has been pretty high. He's found a cush spot starting at the three, but you're not as high on him, and you weren't surprised that a deal wasn't made.
I'm not surprised because he hasn't done anything yet, and it's one of those, well, if you're going to do something, now's the time to start doing it. And then don't forget, they could also match it. So It's not like they're, you know, these extensions, the talk is sort of, I don't want to say it's overrated, but you have, you know, there's no real urgency if, well, we expect to max them out anyway. So who cares?
Yeah.
You know, we could save ourselves $2 or $3 million. But what is, you know, Kelly Oubre or Thomas Satoransky going to do if they, you know, can upseat Otto Porter? Then, okay, we'll let him go.
And then I think we talked a little bit about Len already, so I'm going to skip him. The one that's kind of a bit of a controversy one, because he does have value as a player, he's already proven that defensively. But Nerlens Noel is just a situation where he's just kind of like clumped into a spot where there's too many big men in the role. They already have Ben Simmons on the shelf, so when he comes in, they're not going to have any room in the forward spot because Joel Embiid and Dario Saric have basically stolen the starting spots at power forward and center. And Nerlens Noel, while valuable, recuperating from some knee problems, that's one where they, like, a negotiation wasn't even, like, on the table. It was almost like they had already decided that Noel was going to be an asset for them, and Noel had wanted nothing to do with that, and he wants out of Philadelphia now.
Well, that's the same thing with Okafor, is why you trust the process, trust the process. Well, the process gave you four power forwards.
The problem, I think, with Okafor is that even though he was good offensively, after the first 4 months of the season, I think the Philly knew what, Brian Colangelo knew what he had and just said, okay, I can't make this work. You know? Saric is a better option for me than Okafor. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's. I'm not trying to depress it because, like, even though the Sixers are winless, they're looking better. I don't know how a winless team looks better, but they are better. Would you agree?
Yeah. You have Saric and Embiid who are looking good. However, they're just the same. How long can you play those two together without having a real, you know, Ben Simmons? What is he going to be? Is he going to be a three, or is he really a?
I heard that documentary on him. On his one season at LSU is fascinating. It's on Showtime. You might want to check that one. I think it's called One and Done, where he basically pisses all over the NCAA, and there's a lot of revealing things that happen in that season that would, you know, that you might want to check out.
Yeah.
But, and yeah.
He didn't have to come to the, you know, he was blaming the NCAA for the One and Done rule, and it's like, well, that's an NBA thing. You could have just stayed in Australia or gone to Europe or China.
Well, there's a FaceTime call he has in a scene where he does FaceTime with his sister. He's very lonely there. He doesn't have, like, a lot of friends. His teammates aren't buddy-buddy with him. They win a big game. He goes in the locker room. They don't even acknowledge him. It's like total dysfunction. But besides that, Simmons is basically telling him how he's not going to go back to school after December because he's already made the eligibility requirements to play the second semester, to play the rest of the regular season. And it's just like, I just think to myself, does every freshman do this? And it probably is what every freshman does.
Yeah.
You know, it's sad. It's a sad, sobering fact. But, you know, Simmons is going to be on the men. He's on the men from the broken foot. I don't know where his timetable is now. I would assume it would be January at the earliest.
Well, with Philly, who knows, next year, 2 years.
Yeah, but with Embiid, runaway rookie of the year right now?
There is no runaway rookie of the year. This season's a little too early to figure out who's, because the rookies aren't really doing too well. Mm-hmm. For all the talk of tanking, it's just, well, okay, Embiid is good, but he's sort of limited. And
yeah.
If you're talking about Simmons coming in January and taking over and still winning the, you know, Rookie of the Year possibility, then it's not really a good look.
When Jaylen Brown, who's, like, beyond a project, is, like, one of your best rookies, that's not good.
Well, Jaylen Brown is just scrappy, and he's making smart plays, and... It's one of those, well, it depends where you get drafted.
And he is by far Boston's best athlete. Like, it's not even close.
Well, I would...
Unless you got one for me to kind of... maybe Avery Bradley? Maybe Marcus Smart?
That's the problem, is there's just way... I would have gone with Jay Crowder and just his, you know, deceptive... quick reaction speed. It makes you, you know... being the best athlete doesn't mean... you know, well, I could run the fastest and jump the highest. It's, you know, being at the right place and being able to, you know, lead the league in steals and be where you need to be. And
it was like a decent overview here of you know, just talking about the extensions, talking about some of the rookies. We kind of dabbled into a little bit of everything as we wrap up our 100th episode. I'm still kind of shocked that we even got there, But do you feel like we can get to another 100?
I didn't think we would have made it this far.
Oh, well, thanks.
And, you know, all joking around, I didn't think, no, it was like, all right, you know, most podcasts drop out like in 10 or 20 episodes. Like, no, we kept going and kept going, and then, you know, it takes a while to find your stride, and I've just been, it's been amazed that we made it to 100. So I think we should just celebrate the fact that we're here.
I'll give you just a quick glance at some of the games that they have. Okay, the Pelicans go to Sacramento to play the Kings in that new arena. We got to win this game, right?
The Kings should easily.
Before that, they go to the Warriors on Monday. I don't think they're winning that one. At what point would Alvin Gentry being fired be a very real possibility?
I'd probably say they'll give him to Christmas.
Okay, so not November. Like, not before Thanksgiving.
10 games, it has to be. Something has to catastrophically go wrong. The fact they have all the injuries year in and year out seems to be his saving grace. It's like, well, what can you do? I can't coach because there's no players to coach.
Yeah, I'll give you a league pass alert. The Blazers go to the L.A. to play the Clippers on Wednesday. The Blazers have been fun to watch. We didn't even touch on them, but Damian Lillard has been just beastly. They have a Knicks, for some reason, they have a Knicks-Nets game on ESPN. I don't understand that. The Lakers play the Kings on TNT because I guess nobody else wanted that West Coast spot. In the earlier part of the TNT game on Thursday is going to be the Bulls at the Heat. That will be Dwayne Wade's return to Miami. Is that right?
I believe so, yes.
So we'll see with that. We'll have... I don't see any Friday games this time. There must be something going on ESPN on Friday that's going to... it's going to be blocking that unless I'm just totally blanking on that. Don't they usually do Friday games on ESPN every week? I don't know why they don't have one this year.
This year or this week?
Or this week. This week, I mean.
Is there a major college game or something else going
on? That's what it is. It's the Pearl Harbor Classic. It's Michigan State and Arizona and Kansas and Indiana. They're playing in Pearl Harbor, Hawaii, or whatever. So that's the reason why. Friday is, like, weird. It's the kickoff. It's the tip-off of college basketball, but the real tip-off is Tuesday because that's the marathon night where they have, like, all the decent out-of-conference games all in a 24-hour time span, and it caps off with the Champions Classic and with Duke, Kansas, Kentucky, Michigan State. So just a weird – so, yeah, no Friday NBA because college gets the marquee. And just a bunch of, just a lot of games. Just so many games we can't even talk about them right now.
Well, so far, teams are exciting. Everybody's fresh. Everybody's learning. Everybody's shooting threes and making, not being there on defense. So it's, you know, it's back. Baseball is done. Baseball had a successful run.
And LSU
football
is done. LSU football's done.
Well, they put a good effort in. And
I don't want to talk about the game.
No, but football is continuing its trek south with all their scandals and, you know, shitty football.
Oh, so, God, the NFL has been unwatchable for me lately. I can't watch it. Not even the Saints. I can't watch the Saints.
It's just there's not – it's just – A, it's not fun to watch, and B, it's just not good football anymore. So,
but – that's going to be wrapping up episode 100, and here's to another 100, another 200. Adam Murray, I guess we'll get through it. Soon to be father of two here.
Yay.
You think we'll have a baby every 100 episodes? You might wind up. So let me say this: if we do 100 episodes, means you have another child every time. How many 100s could we get through?
Well, I would like to have this one. This one go through and sort of be successful.
Okay, are we talking about the child or the podcast?
Let's go with the child. Hope that one goes through.
Let's hope the child is successful. So. Okay, on behalf of Adam Murray, this is Andrew Reish. Thanks for listening, guys.